Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today, ISF CEO Steve Durbin speaks with Managing Director of Dream It Ventures, Mel Shakir. They discuss how cybersecurity startups can reach their full potential, how CISOs can keep up with changing cybersecurity software in a time of digital transformation, and tips for cybersecurity software vendors who might approach CISOs already feeling inundated by pitches. Here's Steve.
So Mel, thank you very much indeed for joining me on this podcast today. In our digital transformation series, we've been exploring different elements of the way in which business has been changing, security has been having to transform to map across to that. You know, you've had a long career in the cybersecurity space. Your focus is on up-and-coming cybersecurity companies and particularly their services. Tell us a little bit about the sorts of trends that you're seeing at the moment and how perhaps that differs from, say, the way the industry was just a few years ago, because it's a very fast-moving space.
Yeah, you know, I dived into the security space headlong, I think, in 2003. That was with one of my startups, InCache. It was a database security monitoring solution.
Right.
But it's been now almost 18 years. And in the last, I would say in the last 5 to 7 years, I've seen more innovation in security than I've seen in the previous 10. And
right.
A lot of it, of course, like you mentioned, is driven by, you know, some of the other trends in the industry. And one big trend amongst us is, of course, the digital transformation and migration to the cloud. That has really made people sit back and think and see whether we did security the way we did before, the solutions we had, which worked in data centers, are they really adept for the cloud?
Right.
You know, even as digital transformation is happening, there are a number of other innovations. So for example, you know, as companies migrate more towards SaaS solutions, you know, now they don't have anything else to deploy on-prem. It's just one version that is deployed in the cloud. You know, what does that really entail?
Right.
And the kinds of transformations and innovations that that has driven. I'll give some examples. So for example, you know, just access to the cloud from cloud migration, network as a service and security as a service. These are transformational, in my opinion, bring lots of cost benefits. So in the olden days, you know, when we needed to access the data center, you know, we are connecting over VPN.
Right.
Today, the next generation solutions allow you to connect via the edge.
Right.
And they can provide all the services and as microservices and containers at the edge. It's transformational because you don't need, you know, a whole host of network engineers and networking equipment. You don't need folks in the identity and access management teams, you know, right, granting and managing access, and, you know, all the other security appliances that you deploy on-prem, right, from a monitoring perspective. So now three teams, you know, you could start to combine them, like the network team, the identity team, and even the security team, and bring all those functions as microservices that are being delivered from the edge. You can see how transformational and cost-effective this can be, you know, when networking and security are now done via the cloud, right? So this is one of the innovations that I'm super excited about.
Right.
But, you know, just as applications migrate to the cloud, there's a whole set of new requirements that come into play. For one, you know, cloud security posture management and the workload management in the clouds. Of course, that, you know, that is something that we didn't do before because we didn't have that level of presence in the cloud. The other important change that we are seeing due to digital transformation, of course, is, you know, the public clouds themselves, the AWSs of the world and the Azures of the world, they are providing so many fundamental security services, or rather the foundational security services that one can leverage. And many of the new generation products, they are leveraging that, building on top of that, and, you know, solving the problems that need to be solved. So again, cloud transformation, migration to the cloud is making a big difference. And there's a lot of new innovative companies now than we've ever seen before.
One of the things that very often CISOs say to me is, yes, exactly the points you're making. There is plenty of innovation. There is this movement, cloud, and a number of other different things. But what that is doing is raising the number of different products and services that are out there. Now, on the one hand, of course, that's a good thing. It increases choice. On the other hand, CISOs are feeling somewhat inundated by sales teams who are trying to get in front of them, trying to promote the merits of these different products. So that's always been a challenge. You know, CISOs have never liked being sold to. But It would seem to me that that situation is becoming, if anything, worse. What's your advice for a CISO as to how to cut through all of this noise and to really to be able to focus on to, you know, the very specific products or services that they absolutely need? What can they do to improve, I suppose, that validation?
Yeah. And your question is more around, you know, there's innovation going on, but there is so much noise at the same time. And you
exactly.
know, how do you find, you know, the best companies? There are a few ways to go about it. You know, some of the larger companies have innovation teams. So I'm looking at some of the large financials, and we as venture partners work very closely with their innovation teams. They kind of become a filter for the rest of the organization, including the security organization for CISOs. Mm-hmm. So they have a set of problem statements and requirements that are coming from various teams, and they are pre-filtering, making sure that the CISOs get to see the right companies. The other way is, you know, to work directly with some venture firms, the leading venture firms. We do that. We have over 75 CISOs that we work with pretty closely. And the whole idea is that they want a very highly filtered set of companies that they want to meet. And they have this relationship with us. Again, they've communicated their pain points to us. So we try to get them highly curated meetings, becomes efficient for them, you know, and for our portfolio companies as well. That's another way to make sure that, you know, you stay up to date on the innovations that are happening in cybersecurity. But even those companies that are driving those innovations, you know, you get to meet that highly filtered set.
Yeah, I think some really good tips in there. Now, obviously, from an ISF standpoint, we serve the needs both of the end user and also some of our vendors. Some of the vendor community are, mm-hmm. are members of the ISF, and they find that as a good way of actually being able to talk about some of the new product innovations that they have within a closed member networking environment. But I saw not so long ago, I think you recorded a little while back now, I think it was on YouTube, one of your video clips where I think you'd actually flipped it and you were giving advice to vendors as to how they could better position their products for CISOs, mm-hmm. right? And I thought that was really quite interesting. And I'm sure that some of our vendor members listening to this would be interested. So just summarize for me, if you would, some best advice for people who want to sell to CISOs. What's the best way of doing that?
Yeah, the first thing I'll tell product companies, if you're meeting a CISO, you know, take your A-team with you.
Right.
And do your homework and the preparation that you need to do. This is typically the kind of homework that biz dev teams or sales teams will do prior to meeting an executive. It's really important that you understand that you are there to highlight or fulfill a need that they have. So you must have some understanding going in about their pain points. You must have some understanding about the bigger vision and how your product would kind of fit into that strategy. So going in with that understanding is really important. Many of the CISOs that I know, they're very open about it. If you ask them the question, even before the meeting, they will share information with you. So the first advice is, of course, go in and be prepared. Mm-hmm. The second thing is making sure that you're able to demonstrate a solid ROI with your product. Because at the end of the day, even though the CISO commands a large budget, you know, when they make a commitment to bring in a new technology, they still have to sell that internally. And they also want to make sure that you're going to get a good outcome from that. And everything has to be justified. So being able to demonstrate an ROI of your product, that is really, really important. And there are a number of ways that one can do that. But CISOs, you know, they talk with other CISOs, of course, right?
Right, of course they do.
And building that, if you have some traction with any other CISOs, that CISO is likely to know, you know, if they're in the same region or in the same industry vertical, it's a small community. There's a very good chance that they may know each other. So talking about that credibility that you've already built with the peer CISO, I think that is really important. So often, you know, companies will go, when they're pitching and talking to a CISO, they're putting up a logo wall, but those logos, if they're not referenceable, mm-hmm. you know, then they kind of lose their meaning.
Right.
Also talk, you know, focus on those, right? Those stories are really important. The success stories are really important. And you know, timing is, of course, important as well. Even though many of the CISOs that I know now, they're not following the traditional budgeting once or twice a year. They're mostly micro budgets that are done several times a year. But still, you have to keep in mind that, you know, once an investment has been made, they may not be able to make decisions because, you know, the products that they are currently using may not be end of life. They're not achieved full depreciation for those products. So timing can also be important. But I would say the most important thing, again, is being prepared, making sure that you go in and you highlight and fulfill a need. Now, there are a number of things that companies will do wrong as well in a later stage, which makes it hard to close the deal. And one of the most important things is the ability for a CISO or his team to go out and quickly evaluate a product. And many of the new generation companies, especially the ones who are focused on cloud, they give that opportunity to the CISO that all the CISO needs to do is give them an account with a certain level of privileges into the cloud environment. And you know, that's pretty much all that's needed, as opposed to, hey, I need to bring you an appliance, you need to deploy it. I need a mirrored port to monitor the traffic. You will need to do X, Y, and Z. All the complications that will happen in a typical POC, right? That could slow it down. So figure out if you can do a fast POC mm-hmm. with minimal resources from the CISO's organization, right. That helps a lot.
So it's about doing your homework. It's about making the buying process easy. And it's about being relevant, isn't it? It's those fairly simple things, which unfortunately seem to get forgotten sometimes. You mentioned something there that I want to go into in a little bit more detail, which is this whole concept of return on investment. Mm-hmm. Security, for as long as I can remember, has always been under the gun in terms of budget. You know, we always hear that there isn't enough money. And now, certainly in the work that I tend to do with boards and C-suite teams, we've moved beyond that. We're starting to be able to ask sensible questions about the return on investment. Mm-hmm. And yet it's still very difficult to get across, isn't it? Any advice you can give CISOs in particular as to how they can talk about a security return on investment?
Yeah, in some cases, it might be straightforward, especially when you're talking about if a product, is going to result in some form of automation, then, metrics like a FTE, right, a full-time employee gained.
Right.
That is an easy metric. And there are certain categories of products, like let's say SOAR, Security Orchestration Automation Response. That's all about automation. It becomes easier to talk about metrics in such situations. Other metrics like mean time to remediation, of course, mm-hmm. that is an important metric as well, because at least when it comes to a SOC, the Security Operations Center, how quickly can they respond to an incident? That is important because they can address the volume of incidents. Those are easier to quantify and justify, but I would also advise CISOs to look very closely at some of the new category of products, which is focused on security program management. And because the budgets that the CISOs command is pretty big, they may lose sight of how and why they're spending some money, right? Because they're working with many vendors and service providers. So security program management products, give them the ability to plan and to demonstrate the roadmap, be able to justify, what decisions they're taking and why. For example, even a simple thing like consolidating vendors, right? All of that needs to be justified versus the risk to the institution.
Right.
Right. So this security program management, for example, could be a way, tools like that, which will help them articulate why they're making decisions in a certain way to the rest of the team. That is complementing some of the other things that they could do, like we talked about, which is if you don't have exact metrics, you still need to be able to talk about why you're making decisions. And this category of tools can certainly help over there as well.
I think there's some really good tips there. I think the other thing for me that frustrates me immensely whenever anybody talks to me about security is an overemphasis on the product and forgetting why we're actually doing it. My question is always why. That's my favorite question. Whenever anybody comes to me and says they want to spend anything from a security standpoint, it's about why and how does that fit into the overall business strategy that we're trying to pursue? How does it move me forward? And I think that that's another interesting component that we've seen relatively recently, I would say, where boards are beginning to understand that security isn't just something that's there as an insurance. It does have the potential to provide some competitive advantage. And that moves the CISO into a very much more powerful position than perhaps he or she has been in up until now. Is that your experience?
Yeah, I think so. I think for one, there's a lot more understanding at the board level.
Right.
How critical security is. And it can actually be an advantage to talk about security, just like privacy, for example, right?
Right.
That if there are two companies doing the same kind of work and one says, we are very privacy conscious, they're going to attract more consumers, at least the ones who are privacy focused. I think it applies to security as well. If organizations are able to demonstrate in some way, shape, or form that they are taking all the steps to secure organization, other companies, consumers, they will want to work with them because they know that they're a responsible partner. It certainly can have strategic advantages from just that messaging and that knowledge, I think can bring them strategic advantages for sure.
Sure. Let's move on to another old chestnut that's been sloshing around the security space now for quite some while, and that is that of skill shortage. Mm-hmm. So we're both well aware there's a skill shortage in cybersecurity. Yes. How do we overcome that? What are some of the things that we can do? You mentioned earlier this move towards cloud mm-hmm. and so on. You know, that relieves some of the pressure on certain teams that we might be able to move into other parts of the organization. But there will be people listening to this just thinking to themselves, you know, I'm crying out for a silver bullet. We know there isn't one, right? But what are some of the things that you think people can do to help in this space?
Sure. And I think one of the ways to think about it is security is a shared responsibility.
Right.
And it's not just the security team that is going to be responsible for security, but the entire organization. And how do you develop a culture within the company that is has a security mindset? I think that is important, and that culture, you know, comes top down. I think that is one of the foundations. A lot of companies have training programs internally, but these are things that must be taken seriously. Training, not just of the analysts, but also of all the employees.
Right.
Of course, there are a lot more universities today and programs which are cyber focused, which are working towards helping close the gap when the skills shortage. I'll just give an example. You know, one of our companies, Cyber Skyline, they host a competition called the National Cyber League. And right. there are over 600 universities and even high schools that are participating in that challenge. And this is to groom and create the new raw talent that wants to get into the cyber sector. You know, being part of the competitions like this, they're starting to build up their resume and, you know, their skills essentially. And prospective employers now have a way to go out and find people, not just looking at the resumes, but actually looking at their scores and how it relates to their skills. Right. So yes, there are a number of efforts going on, of course, at the university level, you know, companies like CyberScout and several others who are coming and creating better ways to attract talent and be able to make that information available to prospective employers from a hiring perspective. But, you know, in the meantime, you know, we have technology and training, and we can leverage both of these more smartly, I would say.
I think that's the key to it, isn't it? We have to work smarter, not necessarily harder. I really like the university collaboration piece mm-hmm. myself. I think that just does a couple of things that is really invaluable. Not only does it give you access, as you've rightly pointed out, to some very bright people, but it also allows you to just explore in a sort of fairly contained environment, perhaps some of the innovation that you might want to be bringing forward in a way that is perhaps safer than if you're trying to do it in the wild, you know, out in your own organization, which has its own challenges. But it's that real sort of intellectual challenge, I think, that is very often brought to a situation from working with some of these institutions around the world that adds that other angle. Mel, we could, you know, talk forever. There's so many different topics. But one thing I did want to ask you before you go, looking forward, we've talked about some of the changes. You've talked about some of the ways to overcome some of the challenges. But looking forward, where do you think security is headed over the next 2 to 3 years? What are some of the big changes that you think we're going to see, and how can we really adapt to those?
I think a number of areas. So for one, you know, if you look at some of the directives that came from the Biden administration following some of these big attacks, it kind of gives you a little bit of insight into where things are likely to head to.
Right.
For one, a lot of the attacks right now, they go unpunished because at the international level, there is not that much cooperation. Now, certainly that is going to change, which means that criminals sitting in safe havens will not be able to get away with it. We'll have a much better response to that. That is certainly going to help in a lot of cases. That is just from, you know, how do we respond part of it, right? Not tech per se.
Right.
But, you know, some of the other points over there in terms of the collaboration between government and private sector, mm-hmm. that is really important as well, which is part of the mandate in the Biden directive. And that collaboration has been missing. There are a lot of, you know, bureaucratic hurdles, you know, which they're starting to remove, rules and regulations that they're starting to change. That will help. They're starting to set some standards for commercial software in terms of, you know, labeling products or methodologies that will inform consumers about the security of the products that they are using. And some of the guidance that they're giving in terms of, you know, what technologies to deploy, right? And secure storage technologies, multi-factor authentication, encryption to the maximum extent possible. Those are important, but you'll see a big push in the government towards zero trust.
Right.
And I think that is probably one of the most important goals, zero trust approach. And that can be looked at in a number of different ways. So if you're looking at access, for example, what it means is the old days in which, you know, you had VPN access into a network and now you had access to the entire network, that's gone. You will not be able to see the network whatsoever. You will only have access to the applications that you're supposed to have to the extent that you're supposed to have. And same applies to the data, for example. That essentially reduces the footprint. But there are a number of other things that are happening which will impact security. You know, from the days of the large servers, you know, we went to VMs, containers, and now we're going to serverless. Now, you know, all of these things, they're in the end, they're kind of, if you look at it, they're reducing the footprint of the attack surface. So that could be very meaningful as well. And we talked a little bit about the cloud. I think the foundational security that has been set up in the cloud is much better. So I think CISOs, they should think about using secure SaaS services, think about migration to the cloud to the extent possible. Some companies will be 100% in the cloud. And I think they'll be safer than the data centers and the army of people they need to manage from a security perspective. So all of these things, I think, combined will certainly make a difference. But in the short term, there are certain things that CISOs can do right away. If they've not done it, start using strong identity verification technologies and multi-factor authentication. Try to move to passwordless. That is a big attack vector. And start looking into investing in the next generation security technologies. Of course, that'll be driven by their initiatives within their company towards the migration, especially to the cloud.
Mel, it's been fascinating talking to you. Lots of information in there, lots of tips. You know, my recommendation to people listening to this is probably going to be to listen to it again, because we packed so much into that space. So thank you so much for sharing and giving some of those tips for our listeners.
My pleasure, Steve. I've been all over the place. Lots of information that I wanted to share in a short time, but you know, hopefully it was a value.
No, it was tremendous. Thank you very much indeed, Mel.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks to this week's guest, Mel Shakir. Next week, we are back for the final episode in our digital transformation season, with Steve offering some of his insights. Here's a preview of that episode.
I think that we have to go back to basics in terms of understanding what we're trying to do and then figure out what the best way of doing that is. And that sounds very simplistic, but I don't think it is. I think we have complicated the way in which we go about doing things. And so stripping it back, you know, we talk a lot, and we have done over the years, we've talked a lot about focusing on the crown jewels, on what's important, both at the individual level, but also at the business level. Being able to do that with absolute clarity is hugely important, I think, going forward.
We'll be back for the full conversation in a week. In the meantime, if there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, let us know at securityforum.org. That's also where you can access the catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. Follow us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. Follow our audio feed wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll never miss an episode. And if you like the ISF podcast, we'd love it if you'd write a short review. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak. Associate producer, Katie Flood. Mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.